Welcome to Unsquish the Fish, the podcast where bloggers, writers, and Fins fans come to talk everything Miami Dolphins and bask in the glow of aqua and orange. And now, for the host of Unsquish the Fish, Ron Caniff. Fins up. Fins up. Fins up.
What's up, Dolphins fans? Another episode of Unsquish the Fish. A little bit different angle this time. I actually have this recorded in two different parts. The first part was my very exciting interview, at least very exciting for me, my interview with Dolphin great Richmond Webb. He agreed to come on the show and talk a little bit about what's going on, so you'll hear his opinion on the whole recent thing about Dan Marino and the Omar Kelly statements and whatnot, amongst a few other things. And then I'm going to be joined by Lewis Song from FinManiacs.com. He's been on the show before, as well as a Dolphin super fan. Some of you may know, some of you may not if you're on Twitter. Hillbilly. Hillbilly's going to be joining us from North Carolina, and we're going to talk about, I'm sure again, because I'm not going to be able to hold Hillbilly back from talking about the Omar Kelly, Dan Marino thing. We'll be talking a little O-line, because what would be a show if we didn't talk about O-line in the 2015 offseason? And a whole bunch of other stuff. So to start it off, here's my interview with Richmond Webb. All right, I'm here actually speaking with Dolphin great Richmond Webb. Richmond, I really appreciate you doing this for me, man.
Hey, happy to be here. How you doing this morning, Ron?
Shoot, I'm great, I'm great. It's nice you put a little guy like me on the map, man. It's pretty awesome.
No, I'm always happy to do it. You know, I think... you know, for me, to still have somebody interested to just want to sit down and talk to you, you know, I think sometimes as players, when you're playing, you could take, you know, you really don't appreciate it sometimes. And I'm not, that, you know, once you retire and you kind of get out of the limelight and stuff, I kind of consider myself a fan. So I kind of like interacting and stuff. So people ask me questions, so I just try to answer to them. I kind of enjoy it more now because it didn't have anything to do with the team as far as, you know, when you're playing and you're hitting a rough spot. It's always tough when you really don't want to answer the questions, but you got to answer them when it's going good or bad. So I kind of enjoy it now.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You don't have to hear about, oh, man, how come you missed that block? What happened? Yeah, that's true. When somebody asks you now, you don't have to answer any of that anymore.
Yeah, because I ain't missed no blocks. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. You didn't miss any blocks. So, you know, no one ever asked you that anyway, I guess, right? So I just thought I'd start off, if that's okay. You played, obviously, with Dan Marino for many years, and recently there had been some chatter and a writer who came out who maybe kind of spoke, not necessarily critical, but just pretty much saying that Dan Marino was the reason Dan Marino didn't win a Super Bowl and not that, you know, other factors that they included in this team game. What are your thoughts on that, Richmond?
I think it's really an unfair comparison to just single out one guy. You know, football is kind of different than, I know basketball. Normally basketball, I think now if you got three really good players and kind of a supporting cast, you really set yourself up to win a championship. And I think even in this past NBA, you know, you had LeBron that when he lost Love and Kyrie Irving, if we took a toll, it was only so much LeBron could do that. In the end, you know, with not having enough supporting cast, that played a major role. And then the other thing I look at is injuries. And I think from time to time, even when I was there, I think early on we really had a defense was good a couple of years, and but for the most part, it was normally with the Dolphins, either really good offense and defense when it's great, or vice versa, really good defense. I know when Jimmy Johnson was there, we had good defense, but the offensive production wasn't as high as it normally should. And then I remember one year we kind of limped into the playoffs, so we had quite a few injuries. But you know, one thing I can say is, as a player, you know, and we used to get criticized a lot for not running the football. But you know, you got to look at who's calling the plays. Our job is to go out and execute. So you can't really put that much weight on player. I just think that's just an unfair comparison, and I really don't understand it at all. So, you know, everybody's entitled to their opinion, but I would disagree, because, you know, I've played and I've seen different situations where you can have great players at different positions, but you still don't make it to the dance. So I don't agree with that. So I just thought that was unfair for him to kind of single out Marino like that.
Yeah, I would agree, definitely. And obviously, Marino is a great, you would know that as much or better than anybody. That's for sure.
Oh, no question. You know, he's definitely one of the top quarterbacks to ever play the game. And, you know, if that was the case, you've seen quarterbacks win Super Bowls that doesn't have the talent that Marino has. So it's because, are they the reason they won the Super Bowl? You know, it's kind of like being president of the United States. You get blamed for everything and something goes wrong, but when everything's great, you know, they won't talk about the quarterback position. I think that's just an unfair comparison, or I don't know what you call it, but it's just really unfair to kind of single them out like that.
So what was it like, and you've probably been asked this 100 times, but what was it like, just give me an example of what it felt like to be in the huddle. You know, you're down by 6 or 7, you got 2 minutes left, and you're staring back in Marino's, you know, in the huddle with you. What how did you feel? Did you just feel like, oh, we're going to get this, and we just know we're going to get this, or what was that like?
Yeah, I can remember, I think one of the early ones in my career, I think we were playing Cleveland Browns at Cleveland. May have been even my rookie year, but I remember we were down and we had to run a 2-minute offense. And until you actually go through it and experience that, you know, it is possible, you know, you kind of wonder if you really, you try to focus and say, hey, we can do this. But when you've never really been in a situation like that and you have a limited amount of time, I remember we went down, and the good thing about Marino, he was, you know, he was a great leader, and he took control of the huddle. And playing with him and him, Mark Duke, and Mark Clayton, it was just the chemistry they had. You know, they could go out and they just kind of knew what each other were thinking before. You know, like I said, just played together so long that once you actually see it happen, when you get put back in that situation, it's like, okay, we really can't do this. You know, we got, you know, 50 seconds or 60 seconds on the clock, and we got to go 70 yards. Sometimes it's just a field goal, but it's really pressure when you got to get in the end zone. But sometimes I think we would score fast enough where we might leave a little bit too much time on the clock. You know, that was the thing, that it was always exciting. And then you would run into fans, and they say, why can't y'all do that all the time? I was like, I don't know. We'd be the you know, it's that type of offense is designed really for situations like that. And we always, you know, took time and really prepared in the event, you know, Coach Shuler, Coach Johnson, Coach Wanstead, you know, you got a minute and 20 seconds, you need a touchdown, or you got 40 seconds, you need a field goal. They just give us different scenarios, and we really worked on that on Fridays. And I think that's why, hey, great dividends. We had great players and people that really stepped up to the challenge when we got in situations like that.
Yeah, definitely, definitely, man. It was fun times to watch for sure as a fan. And I was, you know, a lot younger then, and I was spoiled. I got to be honest with you. I was spoiled. It's just like, I grew up with that. And it's I didn't know anything else until the year 2000 came. And then I learned what it was like to not have that kind of caliber, you know, talent on the team. Recently, there was an article written, and it was a scientific, quote-unquote, study done that the Miami Dolphins fans are the worst in the NFL. And, you know, it feels like kind of kicking us where it hurts. You've been around Dolphins fans for a long time. Tell us your experience and your thoughts on that.
I wouldn't say we had the worst fans. I think we got pretty good fans. I think what they've probably seen in the last few years, and I think we're heading in the right direction, is, like you said, growing up, you've been spoiled. The Dolphins probably one of the winningest franchises in not only NFL, but just sports history. So when you're just used to winning all the time and now we've hit a slump, I think people get frustrated because, like you said, we've been spoiled. And it's painful when you're truly a fan and you're going through, you know, struggling or whatever. But like I tell people, I think we're headed in the right direction. And I'd have to disagree with that, too. But I think it's, we might have some small fans, but I don't think we have the worst fans.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So what do you think of Tannehill, man? I'm sure you watch football on Sundays. You watch the Dolphins. How are you feeling about Tannehill this year, man?
You know, I've watched him, and, you know, he's an Aggie just like I am. So definitely, you know, I have interest in him. But I've seen him progress year in. Each year he seems to be taking another step. And the thing about it is I've liked the news, the people they've brought in, you know, Landry, different people to surround him to, you know, where they can make plays and make plays. And I really feel good about him. I feel good about the team this year. So I think he's steady made, you know, progression each year, and I think that's what you want to see.
As you know, we got Ndamukong Suh in the off season. Could you, and you, I'm sure you've seen him play over the years, could you think about anybody that might compare that you had to go against, or was there maybe nobody like that that you had to go against back in your playing career?
Yeah, the thing about Suh, he's an interior guy, so that would like key sense that, I mean, he has a high motor, I'm going to say kind of like John Randle with Minnesota, but he's bigger than John Randle. He has a strength like a Jerome Brown, Reggie, you know, Reggie would slide down there. So he's probably a combination of guys that are really a great pass rusher, plays a run, and he definitely has a mean streak. You never have to push him that way in Dominican food, but guy with loads and loads of talent and probably one of the top defensive linemen in the game right now.
Awesome, awesome. How much effect do you think that now that Marino is working with Tannehill, is it in the organization and working with Tannehill directly, how much positive effect do you feel that's having on Tannehill's game?
I think it's great. Not that you can't read, Tannehill has probably defense and stuff like that, but when you have a player that's played, then played like 18 seasons, so not only are they preparing for film study, what to look for, just to be able to have somebody with that type of information to be able to access it on a daily basis, I just you can't put a price tag on it. So I'm sure Tannehill is reaping major benefits from that, and also it gives Dan an opportunity to be back around the organization, around football game you love growing up, playing as a kid, and you're still with the organization that you play for. So I think it's a win-win for the organization and for, you know, a player like Ryan Tannehill.
Awesome, man, definitely. What about our current O-line? Obviously, that might be the biggest worry for Miami Dolphin fans right now is current O-line, which is obviously something near and dear to your heart. What are your thoughts on the Dolphins' O-line situation for 2015?
I think we're going to be all right. We signed a center to a long-term deal. We brought in the left tackle got hurt last year, so that definitely was hurt. So we put him back where he needs to be, got the center, and then the right tackle, young kid from, is it James from Tennessee?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Put him back at right, and I think the guard play, I think we're going to be much better than what people expect, is just, you know, having to shift guys around last year because of injuries and stuff like that. Get those guys back healthy and they're playing, I think we're going to be fine.
So if week one opens up and we don't have Brandon Albert, man, we can count on you to get in there and play us some snaps at left tackle?
I'll stand over there with the cheerleaders with the pom-poms and rule them on. You don't need to do that.
Okay. All right, cool, man. Hey, I see you're a big fan of the show Naked and Afraid, man. I see you tweeting about that all the time. Why don't you tell me a little bit about that? I actually don't know anything about that show. I've just seen it advertised.
Oh, man, you know, the thing that I really liked about that show is, and you got to have truly a different mindset to even go out and try to survive for 21 days. And, you know, they put them in, like, Colombia and some of the worst, harshest conditions. But to do it for 21 days, and you basically get to, you know, take one tool with you. Sometimes it's like a machete or a big knife and something to start a fire. But then they take you to a remote location. You take all your clothes off, and then you with somebody that is, you know, it's a male-female situation. So you got to try to survive for 21 days, and it's normally like mosquitoes, ants, poisonous snakes, this and that. But then to be naked for 21 days, and then if you make it through the challenge, I guess the thing that does it, you know, is you don't get any money. It's just whether you can do it or not. So I think that's what kind of intrigues me. And now they have Naked and Afraid. I think it's XLR, where they have four teams, three people, and trying to survive for 40 days out there. And I guess the thing, if they were doing it for money, I might say, yeah, but for no money, just to prove a point and to see what they actually subject their bodies to, trying to make you have a different mentality. So, I can't believe it. I love watching the show and just, you know, watching it every week, because there's always going to be something. And I'll be like, man, I can't believe they did that. Or, you know, they'll eat a lizard, snake, whatever they can get their hands on, you know. But I really like this show.
Yeah, man, I have to check it out for sure. I keep seeing it, thinking, oh, I need to see that. I just haven't checked it out yet. So tell us a little bit about what you got going on now and everything you're involved in.
Right now, in Houston, and currently me and my wife have a wastewater company where we do rebuilds or service machines. It's called filter presses, and you can use those in chemical and industrial plants or as water wastewater plants. Even at some food processing plants, they use machines called belt filter presses. But we rebuild those. That we have a contract with the city of Houston where we manage the operations at the plant as far as processing the mud and getting it out the water and then sending it back to the city where they can, I guess, put chlorine, clean it up and stuff to pump it into people's homes. But that name of the company is environmentalmachines.com, and that's currently what I'm doing.
All right, cool, man, cool. All right, Richmond, I really appreciate you doing this, man. It's really exciting to talk to you. Awesome to talk to a Dolphin great, and maybe we'll get together sometime later in the year or something.
It sounds good, Ryan. You have a good day.
All right, thanks a lot, man. All right, Dolphin fans, I am now here with Lewis Sung from FinManiacs.com and Dolphin superfan Hillbilly coming out of North Carolina. How you guys doing today?
Doing pretty good.
I'm doing good.
Cool, 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 man. Hey, let's jump into this thing. What do you guys want to talk about first? We talk about whatever.
Well, I believe you had something going on that you wanted to play, so I'd say we start with off that and have our reactions afterwards.
Okay.
For sure.
All right, yeah. All right, that sounds good. Hillbilly, what's up, man?
What's up, man?
Hey, I know I'm not going to be able to stop you from talking about the all the Marino, Omar Kelly stuff going around lately, so why don't you just hit us with it, man? What are your thoughts on that?
Whenever I looked at it, I couldn't believe what he actually wrote, and it just like something exploded in my brain, and I wanted to get blocked from him. So,
congratulations! I saw that you did today. Go ahead, Hillbilly.
You know, it's just hard to compare errors. I think if you put Marino in this league that's going on now, I mean, it would be gnarly, you know, like how good he would be. And it's just, it's hard to compare the two, but he just seems like he knows everything, and it's just so negative, and it just drives me nuts. And you bring up Marino, and in Miami, I bet he was looking sideways whenever he was driving home.
Yeah, I'd imagine so. What are your thoughts, Lewis? You definitely have a little bit more of an inside kind of, you know, position on that than me or Hillbilly do. What were your thoughts on that whole thing?
You know what, man? Look, this is not really new at all. This is just pretty much what Omar does. He likes to stir the pot. He likes to see what kind of reactions he can get, and truth be told, he won't care what anybody has to say because that's just who he is. But with that said, I don't think I've ever heard him say something as stupid as what he said this time. I mean, and he gets mad and he gets on us because we are arguing facts, apparently. No, he's missing the point. What we are not arguing that Marino never won a Super Bowl. We're not arguing that. We get that. We accept it. We don't like it, but it's the facts. We get it. He didn't win a Super Bowl. That's fine. He didn't win many playoffs games. Fine. That itself is a fact. Got it. No problem. But you have the unmitigated gall to assume, to suggest that Dan Marino... What? Not good enough? What are you talking about? We're talking about a quarterback who is probably one of the best quarterbacks to ever throw a football in the history of the NFL. And not only that, I don't think there are going to be many more who are better at it than him. I know people who have watched Dan Marino in his prime, and they've always told me the same thing, is that he had the fastest release in NFL history. Nobody got rid of the ball faster than Marino did. He had a great arm. He had excellent accuracy. He had everything you needed in a pocket passer. And you say because he didn't win a Super Bowl, he's not good enough to have won one. Are you kidding me?
I know. I agree, man. I agree. My thought on this, and you know Lewis, and Hillbilly, you may not. Now, I've been following Omar Kelly exclusively, like, for a while. He was about probably maybe 4 years ago, 4 to 5 years ago, about the only person I did follow for my news. I kind of feel I've gotten to know his tendencies. And this is interesting, Lewis. I had mentioned to you on Twitter, I think we had messaged each other, that I was interested in doing a show about kind of the media coverage of the team. And you thought, I don't know if that's a whole show. Well, 2 episodes ago, I did about half a show on that with somebody. And I brought up, this is well before the Marino stuff came out, I brought up that Omar Kelly has increasingly become more and more and more negative about this team. And yeah. I kind of came to a realization that I'm not sure how negative he is on the team and the players, because I think he's maybe sometimes too close to some of these players. That's my opinion. He can't see past some of these guys because he's too close to them.
He's biased towards McCain. He's admitted that.
Yeah. He gets biased towards, certainly he was always biased during, you know, towards Brandon Marshall, says, you know, this, that, you know, whatever it was. I'm starting to think that because the way he's built his brand is through Twitter, and he's allowed, he reads just like almost every single tweet that comes his way. You could speak to that, obviously, Hillbilly, because obviously he was reading yours, and we see that he blocks people. He does that to, he's done that to build his brand, but in that, over the years, I think he's become jaded, but not necessarily about the team. I think he's kind of become jaded towards the Dolphins fans, and I think that in essence, he's kind of starting to do things to truly, like a troll. Usually trolls are people that you don't know, and they're trolling you continuously, and they're hiding behind. This is, for me, a kind of like a troll that's out in the open, in your face, a public figure, if you will, who is truly trolling the Dolphins fans. I really think it's time that, I'm going to say that I feel Omar Kelly is still a good reporter, but I think he's jaded and done, and really, this should be his last year as the Dolphins beat writer. He should cover another team, another sport. I think he's more than adequate to do that. But I think it's time. It's time for Omar Kelly to kind of get away from the Dolphins fans. I don't think he really, as a whole, likes the Dolphins fan base. And, you know, we've been kicked in the, you know what's enough over the past few weeks with some of the things that have been written. We don't need it from him. That's just how I feel about it. Maybe I'm just kind of thinking over the top, but that's how I feel.
Dude, I whenever I first got on Twitter, I followed him. I think it was probably 3 years ago, because, you know, in the country, we're like 2 years behind, maybe about 3 years ago. And then he was the only dude I would follow. And like you, I would only like read his stuff and, you know.
And I can understand why, you guys. I can understand why. Since he tweets the most, he gives the most news the fastest. You don't have to go out and read all the articles.
Yeah, just days ago, I tried to get on, say, hey, let me get on somebody else's stuff. And I go, and I mean, they tweet like 2 times a day. I'm like, this sucks. This isn't what I'm used to. He tweets like every day. You're right, Lewis. That's part of how he's built that brand.
Yeah. And then I think it was ever since he did his stupid radio show with Miko. And that's whenever he started to turn on me, you know, like with the stuff that he would write. And I think that she has a lot of to do with it. So that's just me, though.
I don't think it's wrong. I think you pretty hillbilly. When you mentioned the whole Omar and Miko thing, I mean, look, man, birds of a feather, and you can fill in the rest. Yeah. They both have this tendency to be extremely arrogant and condescending to people who do not agree with them. And I can understand, and for a while I understood Miko's tendencies, because obviously you're not going to be friends with somebody who's saying that her husband's no good and blah, 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 blah. And like, I totally get that. I totally get why she gets mad at those people. But now it's become a matter of she's an expert on everybody. She talks about how Wallace was so awesome, even though there's proof that he wasn't. And you see now proof that what we have fits Tannehill's style. It's like, okay, fine. But you want to pretend that Wallace was this super awesome wide receiver when all he knows how to do is run in a straight line. If you don't hit him perfect, you're not going to get it. Maybe he will succeed more with Teddy Bridgewater. That's moot. But the simple fact is you had feelings towards Wallace, feelings towards Gibson, feelings towards all these players who all have this apparent similarity in their personality that they think they are better than how they're being treated and how they're being looked at. Wallace felt like he should be getting a lot more numbers, so Wallace was not happy. Miko was friends with Wallace. Gibson was not getting a whole lot of – what else? Let me see. Chris McCain, she's friends with McCain. She's friends with AJ Francis. She's friends with all these players, and all of them seem to have the same personality – point of view, is that we are better than what you think we are, and we are going to use not only our playing, but we're also going to use our mouths to prove it to you. And that I have an issue with. This is why I applauded the Dolphins. It wasn't just because we reworked the roster to make it more fitting to Tannehill. It was that they removed the players who were not going along with the stronger together mantra. This now feels like a team. And Mike Pouncey went and said the atmosphere feels different. That is not a coincidence. The atmosphere feels different because it is different. Now it's, we are a team. We're going to go out there and kick some butt as a team. There is no more, I want the ball, give me the ball, or I'm going to be upset about it. I did not like Wallace from the moment he was upset that he didn't get his numbers after we had soundly beaten the Cleveland Browns.
The very first game. Yeah, that's what I was about to say. I was so stoked. Like whenever we got Wallace, like I was so happy and went and watched a game with my dad. And like I always watched the interviews afterwards, and I was like, really? We won the game, you know, he should be happy about that, but I think that they got all those guys who, that doofus, our old GM, Ireland, who he wanted to bring in, we got them all out. I'm so happy with that.
definitely agree, guys, and I don't know, how do you guys feel on what I said about maybe it's just time for Omar to... I think it's time for him to cover another team. I mean, I really feel that way. I really feel like Omar, he's kind of trolling the fans. Like, he just doesn't like us.
Omar won't leave. And I'll tell you why. He loves him some South Beach. It's real nice living down here in Miami, guys. He's not going to give that up.
He could cover the Heat. I mean, he doesn't have to cover the Dolphins.
He could cover the Heat. But
he could ship him up to Boston.
Yeah, he'll enjoy Boston. No.
Yeah, since he seems to have a love affair with Brady. I mean, I understand Brady's good, but man, come on, man.
Wins championships, though he doesn't do anything impressive when he does it. But yeah, he wins championships.
Yeah, but the beat writers, I get them to be objective, but Omar's the opposite objective. He's negative, purposely negative, even when there's things to not be negative about. That's just, yeah. And he's kind of, to me, he's like rubbed off on Chris Perkins, and Chris Perkins has become the same way. It's just like, I can't listen to those guys anymore. I really can't.
The only one who's really bad is Omar. I can even tolerate Dave Hyde. And I think the thing is, this is a common denominator here. Omar doesn't like Tannehill. I don't think Perkins likes Tannehill either. I don't think Walker likes Tannehill either. And funny thing is, all three of those guys are on the Dolphins fans' hit list.
That's true. Now, Dave Hyde did come out with an article, might have been the day after the whole thing went down, totally pretty much refuting everything Omar said. I don't know if he did that.
Yeah.
I think had this feeling like, well, let's save some face here. They told Dave Hyde to write the article because it's going to look weird. It's going to look like an apology if Omar does it. So let's just have Dave Hyde do that so that they know, hey, he wasn't speaking for us. We don't want everybody not coming to the Sun Sentinel for their news because Omar said Dan Marino's not good enough. That's kind of how that felt to me. So I don't know if anybody read the article, but he made some interesting points about some sports, how you can use championship to compare, and some sports you don't. And football is one of those sports that you don't necessarily use championships as the barometer of how good someone is at quarterback or any other position.
And that's pretty much – if he had left it at Marino never won a Super Bowl and Marino never won this and Marino never won that, that would have been fine. You want to – even if you wanted to use championships as your barometer – fine, whatever, they won. But you said he's not good enough. Where does that even come into play? What could possibly go through your mind to say that Dan Marino, the greatest quarterback who ever played in Miami and one of the greatest to ever play in the NFL, is not good enough to win a Super Bowl? Where you think, what, are you high? What are you talking about? This is Dan Marino. And the simple fact that him on that aspect of it, that shows just how dumb it is. Greg Likens and all those guys came out and said that was really dumb. He was an idiot for saying that. He lost all credibility. You hear Joe Rose coming out and saying, hello, it wasn't Dan, it was us. We were the ones who weren't good enough. And you hear all these guys from left to right, every direction, coming on Omar saying, are you out of your mind? And it gets to the point where you have to wonder, okay, are you really trying to be a reporter, or are you just trying to get your clicks in? And obviously it's getting to the point where he's just trying to get his clicks in. And I understand he's got to make his money. That's probably a big reason why Miko's part of it there, because people like to come and see what she has to say next, whether they agree with it or not. They want to see what crazy stuff she's going to say next. That makes him money. Fine. You're a real smart guy, Omar. You're making your money. But if you don't want to be here, which it really looks like he doesn't, Dolphins to win, so his job is easier. If you don't like the way the Dolphins do things, go find a place where they do like that they do things. Go cover Baltimore. You love how Baltimore plays. This punch you in the mouth mentality. We're going to be physical. We're going to shove it down your throat, and then we're going to step on your throat, and then we're going to rip your throat out of your body. It's like, that's the mentality you like? Fine, go cover Baltimore. But this is not what the Dolphins do. The Dolphins are a more of a finesse team on offense, and they're working on getting more physical on defense, obviously with the addition of Ndamukong Suh and Jamar Taylor, who's a more physical cornerback. And you got all these guys coming in to make a more physical defense. Are you going to be happier then? I don't think so. It's just going to matter of – it's a matter of, are they going to win? You see how hard Omar is pushing for Evan Mathis? We can agree with that. We all want Evan Mathis. Yeah. But he wants Evan Mathis because the Dolphins will be winners. And the reason he wants them to be winners is not because he likes the team. It's because the Dolphins winning would make his job easier. And that I have a problem with. Because if all you care about is making sure your job is easy, if you don't like the team you're covering, why bother? You just enjoy making money? That sounds like a terrible existence. Do you enjoy what you do?
Yeah. One thing I'm going to say, too, is I'm going to get even a little bit more negative on it. I think a big reason that he wants to get Evan Mathis is because he wants all excuses eliminated for Tannehill so he can sit there and say, see, I told you Tannehill sucked. And that's just bottom line for me where it really is the reason he won Evan Mathis. I'm not even sure how much he cares if we win or lose at this point. I don't know. And he has said openly it does make his job easier when the Dolphins are winning. I have heard him say that. But some of me thinks that he wants to eliminate all excuses. I've heard him say that, too. He wants to eliminate all excuses for Tannehill.
Yep.
Yeah. I loved whenever Joe Rose ripped him early in the morning. I always listen to Joe Rose. That's what I love about these new smartphones. You could listen to any radio station you want. But, yeah, Joe Rose ripped him. Old Greg Likens lost to Doofus Likens after he ripped him. That made me really happy.
Nice, nice. All right, guys. I guess we could move on from that subject and let's talk about something else that kicked us in the gonads. And there was an article released recently about the Dolphins being the worst fans in the NFL. Apparently, they were using like statistical, numerical type data to do this. So I guess that's all they had to go by. What were your thoughts on that? Go ahead, Lewis. First, what'd you think on that?
Okay, for this I'm less enraged, but. This isn't making me. Mind you, I'm not feeling any better about it, but it's still, it doesn't bother me as much as the stuff that Omar did. And by the way, we didn't touch this, but did anybody notice that Omar pretty much went and casted shade upon Barry Jackson?
No. Actually, I didn't notice that.
No,
please do explain.
He said that Omar came out and somebody brought up Brandon Albert, right? His leg and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And this dude gave him an article made by Barry. Because Barry gets quotes from all these people. And in this, it says that Brandon Albert is on track to be starting blah, 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 blah. But mind you, Omar replied to that tweet with the article attached to it and said that, no offense, but you do realize that Barry just writes what he's told.
That's absolutely disrespectful, if you ask me.
They basically said Barry doesn't really tweet the truth. All he does is just write what he's told. It's, okay, you are a reporter. Your whole job is meant to write what you're told.
Yeah.
If somebody tells you something, you are to report it. Not look at what you're told, write it, and then say, I don't believe one word of this. It's like, what?
Yeah.
That was pretty much like, forget the Marino stuff. That to me was the worst thing he'd done all week. It's like, this isn't even a matter of Marino versus Brady or whatever. You literally came out and told one of your peers who you see every day at work that he is not credible pretty much. You basically said he basically said he's not credible. I think that for me was the worst thing he did all week.
Yeah, I didn't even know that. But he'll come out and say, I don't even know who that dude is. I heard him say one time something about Armando. I don't even know who that dude is.
No, that was Miko.
Miko? No, this was like two and a half. This was three and a half years ago. It was right after the lockout. It was right after the lockout ended, and the free agents were just firing like crazy. It was like 2-3 in the morning, and you were getting seeing stuff about this person signed, that person signed. And somebody got on his case about not breaking any stories. And they said, Armando, you know, has broken this, this, and this. And Omar Kelly said, I don't even know who that dude is. I'm like, dude, you're at the pressers with that guy every day. What do you mean you don't know who that dude is? Are you serious? Yeah, he actually said that. He tweeted that. Like, I'm not going back through 4 years of tweets, but I will say for a fact, he did tweet exactly, quote, I don't even know who that dude is. I'm like, really? Come on, bro. Yeah, so he has been disrespectful and dismissive of other writers in the past. That's not a new thing for him.
And it was funny how Miko acted like she didn't know who he was. She's like, oh, he's some blogger.
Yeah, and that was the more recent thing. Yeah, he's some blogger.
Like, yeah,
oh, okay.
He's a blogger for the Miami Herald.
Yeah. ESPN doesn't just go to him.
Like nothing.
Unreal, unreal. So I agreed with you, Lewis, but I'm going to let Hillbilly, I'm going to let you talk on this too. The Dolphins have the worst fans thing. I totally disagree with it, but for some reason that article it didn't really make me mad at all. It gave me no emotional reaction. What were your thoughts, Hillbilly?
Yeah. I saw it and I just kind of laughed. I'm like, okay, so we're worse than Jacksonville or we're worse than than Tennessee or worse than, you know, it seems like nobody in the media or Bleacher Report, maybe there's one guy on Bleacher Report, but that's it, who like, oh, and it's what's his name's son, Sims. The
Chris Sims.
Yeah. He loves the Dolphins.
He does love the Dolphins. He loves him some Dolphins this year, that's for sure.
Yeah, and it's nice to get one guy out of, you know, it drives me nuts. But I know a lot of people up here in North Carolina, you know, like the Dolphins. They have Dolphin stickers on their cars. But I don't know why the stadium is... I mean, I know why they hadn't been playing good, but the stadium is kind of empty a lot, and that drives me crazy. But
that's what they mean when they say that that we have the worst fans. I mean, look, guys, if we're going to talk about the worst fans overall, I can safely say that a lot of places, like in San Diego and North Carolina and all those places, they have Dolphins fans coming out their ears, really, they do, and they're very dedicated and they will fight to the last breath. But I just this aspect of it down here in Miami, guys, I hate it, but I kind of agree with the article, because down here in Miami, these guys are not that dedicated and they will jump off the bandwagon faster than you can blink. They are very fickle. They don't like being here. And I will never forget this one time, just this past year, I went and I watched the Baltimore Ravens game at the stadium. Guys, I felt like there was more purple and black than there was aqua and orange in Miami. That's unacceptable.
Yeah, I felt that way during the Patriots game last year, too. Yeah, during the Patriots game, I was surrounded, just absolutely surrounded by a sea of Patriots fans. It didn't honestly feel like I was at a Dolphins game.
I did the same thing. You remember the Dolphins played them in the playoffs like forever ago?
Which team? Baltimore?
Yeah, Baltimore. And Baltimore just smoked them. Yeah, it was like...
It was 2008.
Yeah. I was at that game, and I was... Even back then, I was surrounded by Baltimore fans with their crazy hats and... I was about to say the other word, but you know, like the crazy hats and stuff. But
just curious, I didn't actually read the article, but who was on the top of the list? Was it Baltimore?
Cowboys. See, because this is how they did it. Cowboys. They simply went by how many seats per average game sold by how much money per ticket. That was bottom line, the base of what they used, and then they also used some local TV listings as well. That's it. They used local TV listings, but pretty much they went how many seats were sold average per game at average price. The Dolphins had the lowest average, you know, per and including the lowest ticket. I don't know that we had the lowest average total, but we had the lowest and the lowest per ticket. And the Cowboys had the highest seats sold at the highest average. That was pretty much what it came down to.
They have a gigantic stadium.
Yeah.
$1 billion.
I think it'll be different once our stadium's like actually is done being remodeled and all that stuff. I think
the stadium's actually gonna be smaller now.
Yeah, that's okay. I mean, I don't see anything wrong with that. I honestly think it'll help once they completely finish it, once they've put the canopy
on.
And
yeah,
I think
a lot
of it, too, I think the reason we get so many – obviously, there's a lot of transplants in Miami. That's one reason. But another reason is these guys are getting to see their team once a year. I mean, we have all the home games, and when it's like super, super sweltering hot, and it's not one game a year, but multiple games, you're not showing up to a lot of these games. When the canopy's there, if they can cool it off a little for the fans, I honestly think that will help. But because Miami's a transplant area, it's never going to be just a sea of Dolphins fans in there.
I can't be mad at the article. It kind of is. It has some validity.
Yeah, unfortunately, especially that it's all statistically driven, it does have a little bit of validity. But it's only one measure of fandom honestly. I think if you went in to see total how many people identify themselves as a Dolphins fan, a Cowboys fan, a Jaguars fan, this, that, the other, if you could just somehow scientifically gather that information, took some kind of polar census, and not just in Miami, but everywhere, there's no way the Dolphins are coming on the bottom of that. I promise you they would come somewhere in the top five.
They're huge in Europe, too.
Oh, my, like, yeah, the downloads, and Lewis, you could say that of your podcast. I don't know if you have the ability to see downloads, like where they're coming from. Do you have the ability to see that, Lewis?
No, I don't believe so.
Okay, I have the ability to actually see the downloads and exactly where they're coming from, down to the area that they're coming from. And awesome. Over 10% of my downloads come from overseas, from other countries. I'm talking Germany, UK, Japan, a lot in Japan. I mean, their Dolphins fans are all over the place. They are Mexico, Canada, Jordan. I mean, you know, all these have, I have multiple downloads from all those countries. So
Chris,
it's
Stephen Ross.
Yeah, so it's interesting. It's interesting to see that. And then another thing too, that goes to show you, just recently did the Miami area even break into my top five of locales of the United States of general area. I've had other areas like in California, New York City, that I get more downloads from than Miami, you know? So it's true what you're saying, Lewis. And unfortunately the article is a little bit correct. I just don't like just using that as the barometer of who has the best fans. That's the only problem I really have with it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll move on to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll move on from that. Like I said, it didn't really get me emotionally charged like some other articles and some other things I've seen over the past few weeks, that's for sure. Let's get into something a little bit more serious, a little bit more concerning. But, Lewis, you sound to be a lot more positive on it, so I really want to hear everything you had to say on it. The Brandon Albert, will he or won't he be ready week one? What have you heard, and what are you thinking? What do you know?
Well, this is just me personally. I don't think – that when I said that I don't think it was going to be that big of an issue, it wasn't that I'm worried about the offensive line if Albert's not there. What I mean is the fact that I think Albert will be ready. I feel like, okay, you see, again, you see this, we come back to what Barry said, and Omar kind of scoffed at him because he says that he sees things his way. Omar and Perkins and Walker have been going out of their way to talk about how much of a limp that Albert is walking with. And Omar recently said that, I watch the man walk every day. You don't think I can't, you don't think I notice the difference between a pimp walk and a limping walk? and I mean, okay, maybe he's still a little banged up, but okay, duh, he's not ready to go yet. Otherwise he'd be in training camp. That's not, right. He's not going to be ready to go right away. He's not going to be in the preseason. We already knew that. It's going to be a little while longer, but the goal to get there has always been at the start of the season. It's never been a matter of, I'm going to get there earlier, I'm going to be ready to go. Luis Delmas was a miracle, okay? He got back in like 5 months when it was supposed to be like nine, okay? It's like, so, and Albert, he got hurt earlier, so he's had more time to recover. And I truthfully don't think it's going to be that big of an issue. I think he will be ready come week one. And if he's not, then how much longer can he be out? Until week two? If that's the case, then I think we can survive 1 week.
Well, we could survive 2 weeks just based off who I think the Jacksonville and Washington, even though it's on the road. Yeah, Redskins and then the Jaguars. I feel like we could survive without him for 2 weeks, but then I'd like to have him for, I think it's the Bills game. Yeah, the Bills game week three.
Yeah, once the Bills show up, yeah, then we need Albert. And I'm sure by then he'll be back. So. Yeah. I don't see it as an issue. I think it's being completely overstated, the fact that he's limping and all that crap. He always has a limp. So obviously if he's still banged up, the limp is going to be more noticeable. That just seems logical to me. If you limp anyway when you're walking, health limp is going to be worse, cuz you always walk with a limp and now you're hurt. So it's going to be limping worse. So what he may be interpreting as a limp that's really, really bad, oh my God, he's really hurt, might just be, no, he's only a little bit hurt, but it's augmenting his normal limp. You can't give the same barometer for every player that you have. Not every player walks with a limp every day all for all his life. So you can't give the same measurement for you're limping. It's like, and how do you even do that? Can you do you have like a measurement for limp? Do you like, okay, he put on this many pounds on his walk, so this must mean this? Like, he sometimes the stuff he says is like, what goes through your brain, bro? Really? Like, how do you come up with this stuff?
I don't know, man. So, Hillbilly, the question I'm going to ask you is, from the fan perspective, let's say they tell us, no, Albert's not going to be ready for a couple weeks. Are you in panic mode, or are you feeling – how are you feeling about it if you hear that news, if you do happen to hear it?
I'm not in panic mode, dude. I watched Jason Fox play. Like, I think it was the final couple games. They finally let him start and didn't let – oh, what's his name? Move all over the line.
Dallas Thomas.
Dallas Thomas.
Yeah, that guy.
It says a lot that he's what's his name to you.
Yeah, dude. I think the rookie will start over him by then a training camp. But I thought Jason Fox was fine. I think he can, if he's able to stay there the whole training camp, I wouldn't be too scared if he didn't come back till whenever we play Buffalo. You know, I know our schedule is pretty easy until, you know, Buffalo, but I think we're going to beat Buffalo anyways. I don't think Rex does really too much for them. But
that's spoken like a true fan, Hillbilly.
Yeah, but, I mean, they try and make this whole, you know, oh, Buffalo is so good. They're not going to be good with EJ Manuel throwing the ball, especially with
well,
Sue's
that's the thing,
him.
Though. They're saying that it's not going to be Manuel; it's going to be Castle. Okay, so maybe
yeah, whoop-de-doo.
Yeah, half an upgrade. There you go, Castle.
Yeah, whenever Castle played with New England, I don't think people are really seeing the team that was around him in New England. That team was stacked at every position. So
well, they don't see it because Tom Brady. It's too easy.
Yeah. Yeah, but I wouldn't be too worried about that, man. I just don't want doubt. I'm worried whenever Dallas Thomas is in there. That's the one thing I'm worried.
All right. Well,
I don't think it'll be an issue. It won't be an issue.
Lewis, yeah. I'm going to ask you a question. Okay. This is interesting. Do you think that if, let's say, Brandon Albert doesn't start the first couple of games, are they going to put in Jason Fox and just leave the line alone? Or are they going to put in Juwan James at left tackle and mix it all up again like we had last year? What do you think they're going to do?
Well, every indication so far in camp and all that is that Juwan James is going to stay at right tackle where he belongs, which I wholeheartedly applaud them for doing, yeah. And Jason Fox is going to take over at left tackle, and I'm completely fine with that. Fox was in Detroit, and mind you, Fox is not an old man. He's like, what is Fox now, 26 years old? He's not an old guy. He's a veteran, but he's not like 32 years old and he's on his way out. Actually, no, he turned 27 in May, so he's still a young guy. We're acting like Fox is this terrible, washed up player. He's still young. He actually still has room to get better. He was being groomed to be the future left tackle. If Fox is healthy, he can do a lot better than people are giving him credit for, and I don't think it's going to be an issue if he has to take over for Albert for a couple of weeks. Now, if we wind up going up against Buffalo with Fox on left tackle, then I'm going to start sweating because that makes me nervous. Like, I understand the whole offense problem of it, but last year we had to face EJ Manuel, and we got our butts handed to us in Buffalo with Manuel as the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
So that defense is no joke, and I don't want to have to deal with Tannehill falling on his back every play because they have one of, if not the best, defensive lines in football. I'm sorry. I think Buffalo might be a little bit better than Miami in the defensive line unit if we're talking about depth and all that.
Okay. Now, what if – and I have a reason I'm asking this question. What if they kind of – because during OTAs and minicamp, the press does not see all the practices. They right. just see some of them. Training camp is a little different story. They're seeing almost all of them. Not they still do kind of some hidden stuff, but they see ones, but they're not allowed to report on certain things. I think they're not allowed to report on certain things anyway. Regardless,
they're not allowed. Media is not allowed to report when injuries are seen, and they are not allowed to report on quotes about injuries. They're not allowed to do that. Okay. You're not allowed to ask about injuries.
What if they're just showing us what they think the media and the fans want to see when they're seeing those practices, but when the media is not there, they've been putting Juwan James a left tackle? And the reason I ask that question is because Terrence Vidae did an interview, And he, on a couple occasions, talked about going up against that Juwan James was, you know, oh, Juwan James when he's at left tackle, when he's at left tackle. But here's the thing I wasn't sure about. Is he talking about this offseason or is he talking about last year? That I never got clear, but it just made me think, are they snowing us? But I think, what is it, July 30th, 31st, whichever the first practice is, we'll have our answer then. I'm just wondering, are they kind of playing with us a little on that so we don't freak out again?
Well, it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility that they're hiding some things that they don't want everything to be public. Philbin has made it a point that he likes to mess with the offensive line, see who goes best where. They're going to be bouncing people back and forth on the line all throughout camp, I'm sure, because they want to see who does better, if it's going to be Turner or Linkenbach or Thomas or Douglas or James or Fox. It's about the only player set in stone is Pouncey at center, and it'll be James at right tackle when Albert finally shows up.
Yes.
Those are set in stone. But with Albert gone, suddenly the dynamic is thrown off. So I would hope that they've learned their lesson and they're not going to try and develop Juwan James to be a left tackle when it was clear all throughout his career at Tennessee that he is a right tackle. That's what he was drafted to be. He's not a left tackle. And his performance last year as a left tackle proved that.
Yeah.
Fox knows how to play left tackle. Whether he's going to be good at it or not, he's never going to be Brandon Albert, but he could be adequate until Albert's return. That's the thing about backups, is that people have to realize, okay, this is a backup. He's not going to be anywhere near the starter, because if he were anywhere near the starter, he could compete to start.
He'd be maybe starting. You're right. That's true.
Maybe be starting if he was close to the starter. So Fox will be good enough going up against Washington and Jacksonville, especially since Dante Fowler Jr. is out for the season, so that pass rush issue is gone. But if Albert's not back by Buffalo, then for that game, I will be worried.
Yeah, I'd be concerned too. Well, I tell you what, though, guys, and I think you could both agree with me, man, am I sick of thinking about this line. I am so sick of thinking about it. I'm almost getting sick of talking about it, but it's like it's the thing to talk about, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I got. All right.
Until the line is fixed, it's going to be something to talk about.
I know. I just hope that we can get this line right, because I know that the sacks weren't as bad last year, but we did lead the league. The O line led the league in hurry, sacks, and hits. If you combine them all, they were actually bottom last year. So for those who say, you know,
sacks 3 years, 139 sacks in.
Yeah, that's an insane amount of sacks.
3 years starting has had worse, and that was David Carr with one more than Tannehill.
Yeah, and we know how that ended up, but I know that
David Carr broke.
Yeah.
Carr broke. His father's on the way.
All right, man, let's leave that alone. Lewis, you were going to talk a little bit about a couple of the pieces that you've written lately, specifically one you were mentioning about three guys we need to be successful this year.
Yeah, I wrote a couple of columns, and I just a little while ago posted the second one, and basically it's that I wanted to look at who needs to step up more for the Dolphins in 2015 if we want them to succeed. And for my three guys, and I want you guys to come up with three guys too, just so you have some time to think while I talk about it. On offense, the guys that I wanted to step up was. Okay, I'm going to go with the one that's actually the least obvious, and I'm going to go with Deion, because he was already developing pretty well last year.
I'm sorry, Lewis, you said Deion Sims? Is that what you said? You cut out just for a second.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I said Deion Sims.
Okay, I just want to make sure that everybody heard that. Okay, great.
Yeah,
continue on.
Kind of a crackling going on all of a sudden. So I said Deion Sims, and the reason I say that is because he did a pretty good job developing last season, but you see that there's still more potential to be better. You saw how he and Tannehill were kind of getting this kind of rapport going near the end of the year, especially with Charles Clay sitting down a little more, and you see that Sims has all this potential. He's still pretty big, but he's not as big as Cameron, obviously. But I did pick him just because I think he could be Cameron's replacement in case something goes wrong. I said Sims needs to step up, because two punch that I have been dreaming of with everything that I am ever since I saw Gronkowski and Hernandez in New England. I envied that pair so much. That the fact that Brady had not one, but two gigantic and fast targets to throw to, and pretty much every play was either going to him or Hernandez, and if it wasn't going to them, it was going to Welker. So all he needed was three guys, and he was good to go. Cameron is a Pro Bowl talent, and when healthy, he can surely prove to be an elite talent on the field. And that's the thing, is if healthy. Sims, I'm not going to go as far to say that he can be Gronk or Hernandez or anything like that. That's ridiculous. But he can be a really good tight end. And together, on the field, both at the same time, they can create mismatches that Tannehill can exploit. Mm-hmm. I've wanted something like that for so long, and I'm really hoping that Sims steps up, because if Sims gets to the point where he can play as well as I hope him to play, we will have that 1-2 punch, and the Dolphins' offense will really start to click that way. The second guy on offense that I talked about was Billy Turner, and obvious, that's pretty much for obvious reasons. If the Dolphins are going to go anywhere, they need that offensive line to protect their quarterback. I didn't pick Dallas Thomas or Jamil Douglas or anything like that because I'm not sure who's going to be playing yet.
Okay.
So I don't know if it's going to be Thomas. I don't know if it's going to be Douglas. It might not even be either of them. It might be Linkenbach or McClendon or somebody like that. But at right guard, it's pretty much all but guaranteed that it's going to be Billy Turner. And I said this, and I talked about this with you the first time I came on with you, Ron, mm-hmm. is that Billy Turner has not yet had a chance to use what he has most of, his brute strength and power. They talk about how Linkenbach is taking first team snaps away from him. I don't care. Offensive linemen have one job, protect the quarterback, and the only way to do that is to hit the guy in front of you. There's no hitting yet. All they're doing is working on footwork and hand technique, and that's something that Turner's never been good at. I'm not worried about it. I think Billy Turner's going to win the job, and he's going to lock it down as soon as he gets to start pushing people around, because he's stronger overall as a player than he needs to be able to play like one in order to be effective. So if Turner can step up and lock down that right guard spot, that means there's only one weak point on the line, and I think we can get by with having only one weak point, because the one weak point is in between two Pro Bowlers who can pick up the slack. And the last one, I kind of have to go here because, I mean, without him, the offense goes nowhere. It's Tannehill. And he did really well last year, but now that he has these weapons in front of him that fit what he does, we supposedly are going to have a better offensive line once Albert returns and Turner has taken care of the right guard spot. If Tannehill needs to show just what he can do when he finally has pieces around him that actually function properly. This is not me doubting Tannehill by saying he needs to step up. This is me saying, okay, boy, you've got everything you need to succeed. Go out there and show them what you're made of. Mm-hmm. So, and if he doesn't, which I'm not saying he won't, because I actually think he really will. But if he doesn't, then you kind of have to give him a side eye look and think, what happened? You had everything working for you. What happened? So he does need to step up and build on what he did last year, because if he somehow gets worse and everything around him is actually better than it was before, then I'm going to have to look at him funky, because if you give him everything he needs and he still fails, and mind you, I don't mean failing as in win-loss record. That's crap. I'm not into the win-loss record crap. He just needs his numbers to improve upon what it was last year. Okay. Now that he has pieces around him that work.
Okay. Hillbilly, man, I'll let you go next. Have you thought of three guys? Three other guys?
Yeah, man. My third one is I think Damian Williams is gonna be really good this year. I know everything's really? Yeah. I think he catches better than Miller. Like the balls, it's like whenever Tannehill throws Miller a ball, it's like he has stone hands. Drives me nuts.
That is true about Miller, yes.
That really drives me nuts about Miller, and it's his contract year and all that stuff. But I really like Damian Williams. I think that fifth-round guy, forget his name, but
Jay Ajayi.
I think Damian, Yeah, Jai, yeah. I think he would be good too, but I really like Damian Williams. And then my second one would be I think Stills is gonna step up. I think people are gonna forget about him, and because we have the number one draft pick, Parker, and I think Jennings will be good too. But I think Stills is gonna break the top of the defense. He runs just as fast as Wallace, but
little slower. Not too much, but a little slower.
Yeah, well, he actually
runs a 4.33. Stills runs 4.38. It's minuscule, well, but it is there.
Well, at least he goes after the ball then.
And correct.
He doesn't try and make one handed catches like, you know, Wallace saw Jarvis Landry doing.
Correct.
And then my number one, of course, is Tannehill. I think he's going to get better. I think there's no cancer in the locker room. Especially with Jennings there. I think Jennings is going to be big too. He's like the old Pappy. That's what we call him out here in the country. He's going to get the young guys and steer them in the right direction and not have somebody else do an interview for him. but I think Tannehill will do a lot better. I remember last year seeing one of these passes he threw. I think it was to Jarvis, but he was on the pitcher's mound and he just bulleted right through there, and everybody was like shocked he threw that pass. I forget who it was against, but it was a bullet, and I just think he's gonna do a lot better. And people are saying in quotation marks that he's throwing the deep ball better, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think we all want to see it with our eyes, honestly.
Yeah.
All right. Lewis, are we doing three total, or are we doing three offense, three defense? We're just doing three total.
I'll bring up the defense after you're done with your offense.
Okay, so we're doing we are doing offense. All right, then. Well, then my first one I'm going with is definitely Cameron. And the reason I say that is we brought him here because he's a red zone threat, and that was where our issue lied last year. We could get from the 20 to the 20 like nobody else, literally. Had more red zone trips than any other team, but when we got into the red zone, it was trouble, and that is a big reason why Cameron's here. So he needs to perform in that area. That's why we brought him. A second one, and it's going to be for the same reason, and I know he's going to start slower because of the injury, but we need Parker not to come in and catch 80 balls and 1,000 yards, but we need Parker to also be that red zone threat. When he's on the field and we're in the red zone, we need Parker to be that red zone threat for sure. And then thirdly, Tannehill's the obvious one. You guys both mentioned Tannehill, but I'm going to go Lamar Miller. Can you just do what you did last year? I think if you can, and maybe even not even the total yards, maybe he gets some carries gone from him because we have now three backs, really a little bit of Williams and some Ajayi. But if he could keep that yards per carry, which has been one of the tops in the league since he's been in the league, if he can just keep doing that, I think we'll be scoring the way we need to score to get this offense into the top 10 scoring-wise, honestly, because we know we can go from the 20 to the 20. And that was one of the biggest reasons I felt we didn't get Andre Johnson, is Andre Johnson is a possession receiver. He's not a red zone receiver. I know his argument, did we contact him, did we not? It doesn't really matter. The point is he really wasn't a fit for what we were looking for. But we need the guys that we got to be that fit to do what they came to do. And in Parker and Cameron specifically, they need to finish in the red zone.
I'm going to go off the beaten path just for a minute because I'm glad you brought up Andre Johnson. It wasn't just the fact that he doesn't fit, Ron, not to me anyway. For me, I kind of got this feeling of he's kind of like Wallace in a way again.
Yeah.
This whole, I want to be number one. I want to be highest paid. I want this. I want this. I want that. I totally agree with Andre Johnson on one thing. His career has been a mess because his quarterbacks have been terrible. I'm not even going to try and debate that. His quarterbacks have been awful, and I feel bad for him because of it. But the fact that he puts up this kind of a stink about it makes me feel like if this isn't a, if you're what happens now if you're in Indianapolis and you don't get your numbers, you don't get to win. What happens if the Colts fail? If they don't make it past New England again, because it seems like every time Andrew Luck goes up against Brady, he falls flat on his face.
Yeah, he gets crushed.
Yeah.
So what happens then? Is Johnson going to make another stink because they couldn't win? Because it's pretty clear he wants to win, and I can't blame him for assuming that Andrew Luck is his best shot, because of the four quarterbacks that came out of the draft class of 2012. It really is Andrew Luck who's the best of the best of all of them. It's like, I'll put Tannehill. If I'm going to give it a ranking, I'm going to put Luck. Wilson is number two, but just barely. And then Tannehill is right on his heels. And then, obviously, you have Brandon Whedon, who's not even in the conversation, and RG3 not even in the conversation.
But I can't wait till Sue hits RG3.
Nice. For all we know, it may not even be RG3. Jake Gruden doesn't like him.
That's true. He said, here's a starter. Yeah, for like week one of camp. You're the
I'm
starter.
Actually going to that game in Washington.
Oh, yeah, I guess you're not that far off, are you?
Yeah.
You need to live tweet us and like, see what, are they booing him or not?
we'll do.
Your quarterback, Robert Griffin III.
Boo.
Comes hobbling out to the field.
All right, Lewis, you want to go ahead on the defensive side for three guys?
Yeah, okay. So I'm going to start with this. Actually, it's going to be the two of them are going to actually be pretty obvious. The first one is Jamar Taylor, and obviously he needs to step up because he's the favorite to win the starting job at the other cornerback spot. We need him to step up. If he doesn't step up, we're in trouble. But I firmly believe he will do it. Jamar Taylor has all the talent he needs to play. He's aggressive. He knows how to cover. He's got the speed for it. You know, people were I find this funny. People don't realize this, but people were talking about Trey Waynes' straight line speed and all that, and how much they loved how fast he was and all that crap. Jamar Taylor has a faster 40 time than he does. Mm-hmm. People don't realize this. Jamar Taylor's faster than Trey Waynes, and people were praising Waynes' speed. It's like, guys, do you realize that if Jamar Taylor were in this draft, he would be number one overall and not Waynes?
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. I've heard that said by multiple people.
So happy we didn't get him.
Oh, my God. I would have cried if it had been Trey Waynes. I was so happy that Minnesota took him. I was like, oh, thank you, God. Now we can go get Parker. But the fact remains, Taylor needs to be the one to step up. He got everything he needs. And he's got his tutelage from Courtland Finnegan. He's learned his lessons about what it means to be a cornerback. Now he just needs to go out and do it. Stay healthy and ball out. That's all that needs to be done. I think he can do it. He just needs to stay on the field. The second one we have is Chris McCain. And, again, it's pretty obvious. McCain is the favorite to win the strong side linebacker spot. He's an amazing pass rusher. He's working on his coverage skills, I would assume, because that was like his biggest weak spot, his biggest weak point. And if he can shore that up, he could be a star in this league. I firmly believe that. Mm-hmm. This isn't a matter of bias, because I mean, McCain is an awesome guy. He may get a little nuts on Twitter sometimes, but he's an awesome guy in person.
Yeah, he does get a little nuts on Twitter.
Or whenever he's talking to Crowder. Did you hear him?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm not gonna go there because I put up an article about Crowder too, his Dolphins memory. So I'm not gonna cast aspersions on either of them. They're both awesome guys in person. Really, I've met them both. They're both awesome guys. But McCain has the weakness of his coverage. If he can work on that, that'll be all that's left. He's already an awesome pass rusher. That's not even a problem. If he can learn how to be coverage, especially with his frame, he could be what we wanted Deion Jordan to be.
Yeah.
And that means a star in this league. So if he steps up like that, linebacker's done. Misi's got the middle handled. He's a lot better than people give him credit for. And the film review we have on the website proves that. Jenkins has it handled as well. McCain is the last spot of that starting linebacker core. And the last one, I don't know if this might be a little bit of a surprise to you guys, but I'm actually going to go with Olivier Vernon.
Oh, that makes sense. I see why, because this is his chance to shine. He needs to be cleaning up is probably what you're thinking on some of that.
My thinking is pretty much that he needs to show what he can do, like what he did in 2013 when he got 11.5 sacks.
Mm-hmm.
With Sue taking up double teams and Wake taking on double teams on the other end, that means that Vernon's going to be one-on-one against a left tackle a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so he needs to show that he can do what he did in 2013. He needs to be that star defensive end who made the 1-2 punch of Wake and Vernon. He needs to go back to being that. He didn't get a lot of help last year, and as a result, his numbers suffered.
Yeah, because the interior was so weak.
Right.
Yeah.
So, got Wake now on this end, Sue in the middle. If we want to have that awesome pass rush, then Vernon needs to step up and do it too. Because you know what? We all know that no quarterback likes being pass rushed. No quarterback likes it. Every quarterback hates it. Brady in particular does not like getting pass rushed. So if we can give him trouble, if you can give any quarterback trouble, then half the battle is already won.
Okay. Yeah. All right, man. I definitely agree with everything you said. What about you, Hillbilly? What you thinking, man?
Yeah, Misi really drove me nuts. I know you were praising him, and I hope he does better, but I really want him to step up, and I think he will. I just hope he stays healthy. But
that's the only problem.
Yeah, but I think Shepard will fill in pretty good from what we've been hearing. You know, you can't really trust Omar, but you know, I think Shepard should do better. But I really want. I love the way that Misi tackles. He will knock the crap out of you. And I went to a couple games and I saw him. I'm like, man. And then he got hurt. You know, he flashed. And I think that he needs to step up. There's going to be no more excuses now with Sue in the middle, of course. You know, I was going to say Jamar Taylor. But
you can go ahead and say Jamar Taylor, man.
Yeah, I really think he does. I like Lippitt. I really like Lippitt. I know he played wide receiver and all that stuff, but
Lippitt won't be ready though this year, not yet.
Yeah. He's a year away, most likely. He's exciting, but he's a year away.
He's got a lot of potential, but he's not ready to come in yet.
Who do you think will be behind Taylor?
Bryce McCain.
Yeah.
Then who's the nickel if that happens?
My guess, Bobby.
What do you think about Will Davis
as a nickel?
No, just in general, because I'm hearing ramblings that they say he's not even on the 53, and I just personally don't see that. I see him on the 53.
I think Davis will make the roster. I think, but I wish with everything that I am that Davis was bigger. I wish he was bigger. Because he has everything he needs to be that strong safety Rashad Jones type. He is a ball hawk like no one else, but he can't turn well. And if you turn, you can't play corner well. And let me tell you guys, I hate having to say stuff like that because Will Davis is awesome. I love Will Davis. He's an awesome guy. I wish I could go and have lunch with the man. He's an awesome dude, but he struggles in coverage. He can't turn with his guy. If he was playing safety, if he were big enough to handle the safety position, I think he'd be a pro bowler. He can ball hawk like nobody else. But as a corner, a boundary corner, I don't know. I don't think so. He has a lot of work ahead of him.
Do you think our safety behind Delmas?
Aikens?
Aikens or Thomas, depending on how they play it, I guess.
Aikens. They've been praising him a lot, too, haven't they?
Walt Aikens, Michael Thomas, both have ability to be really good safeties. And Michael Thomas is more of an emergency versatility guy. Michael Thomas could probably play the nickel, too. So I love Thomas's physicality, and Aikens is learning how to do that, too. That's why they moved him to safety to begin with, because he, like Davis, ironically enough, Aikens struggled to turn well. So as a safety, they gave him a shot, and I guess Aikens is just bigger than Davis is, so he can afford it.
And he blew up, too. I think he gained like 15 pounds or something over the off season.
Ruh-roh. I hope that he's not like
I don't think that's a bad thing for a safety. I don't like to hear it from certain positions, but I don't think
the blowing up part. I mean how he did it.
Oh, you mean like
did he take the Deion Jordan treatment?
No, I'm hoping we're like past all that, because when that rash came out last year, we got hammered. But this year, hopefully, we've gotten through that segment of the off season and we escaped it.
Yeah, we gotta keep our fingers crossed.
Yeah, I was nervous about Miller because we've been hearing so much about, oh, he's bulking up, he's gained all this muscle. I'm like,
and then he's deflating back down. He's like, he's like experimenting with his own body. He's like, pick a spot, man.
I hope he gained a little bit so he can get past the second level. It seems like he just kind of falls over after the second level. But you guys are probably going to be shocked for my number one. I think Wake needs to step it up.
No, I'm not shocked. I actually contemplated saying Wake myself, but I totally get where you're about to go here.
Yeah. You know, it's the run game. You know, it seemed like he just kind of – there was a bunch of plays where you're just like, is that Wake? He just kind of let him run by. Didn't tackle good, but – I think Sue being there makes everybody better. I think we'll have one of the best defensive lines. I think OV will be perfect. And I like our second round pick. I know a lot of people were shocked, but I was stoked to see that big old boy.
He's a big dude. He's a big dude, strong.
I think he might get a lot of playing time as well.
Well, I don't know. We'll see. I don't know if Jordan Phillips is going to be good enough because you got to look at it from this perspective. Who does Phillips have right now that he's competing with? Right now, it's Sue and Mitchell who are the for sure starters. And then you have AJ Francis, Anthony Johnson. You have CJ Mosley, who Sue has made it a point to say he loves playing next to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
yeah. I think he'll learn a lot. He's probably a second-year player.
He'll learn a lot. Yeah. Like Lippitt.
Yeah, like Lippitt. But I really think Wake needs to – I hope he plays better because he's been so good for us for so long. And we need to get him to the playoffs. I feel so bad for him. But I think it's such a different team now with all the people that needed to be gone are gone. And I don't know how people were making fun of our front office, but dude, they've done good. I have no complaints of the people they've added and the people they drafted. So
yeah, for sure, for sure.
What about yours?
All right, man. My three. Okay, so number one is in this day in the NFL, you need three cornerbacks a lot. So Bryce McCain is one of my guys. Because he's going to be on the field playing that nickel spot, which is his natural spot where he's most comfortable. So I really want to see, and we have to assume that Jamar Taylor is going to be able to man that and get that starting position opposite of Grimes. So that means Bryce McCain is a nickel, and he'll be seeing plenty of play. So I think he's going to be a very important piece of the defense. It's a player we grabbed. It was kind of a little bit of an under-the-radar signing, I think. Not for hardcore fans like us and the writers, but more for the national media. It wasn't anything talked about. No one's mentioning that signing. I thought it was a good signing. We need him to play some good nickel for us.
my bad.
No, that's cool. My dog was barking earlier. I don't know if you guys heard it.
that's Marino.
yeah, nice. Another one that I really want to see, and I'm excited to see what he's going to do, a second year with full experience, Jelani Jenkins, now with the line more enforced and especially up the middle, would Jenkins be able to run free? I really want to see how far he can take his game and how much skill he really has. Now that hopefully he's not going to be seeing as much offensive linemen in his face, I'm thinking that he could shine even more and even up that tackle number even more. And then a third guy, and it's a guy who I thought was this year the backbone of the defense will be Sue, of course, but last year until he got hurt, it was Delmas. And when Delmas went down, that defense fell apart. And so with Delmas coming back, if he can be 100% healthy, ooh, boy. I mean, you're talking about the anchor of our defense last year, and now you've added Sue with that. Oh man, I'm liking it. You got Brent Grimes, you know, you got Wake, you got Vernon. I've been saying it since the first episode I did of this show months ago. I see Dolphins defense. They get a couple of these players that we're talking about playing even just good. They don't have to be great, just good. This is a top 2, 3, 4, 5 defense for sure. I just don't see how they won't be, honestly, unless somebody starts failing that we're not expecting to see fail.
I'm starting to come off as arrogant, I think, but again, it's like I got to talk to Delmas at the Dolphins kickoff luncheon, and this guy has a passion for football like you wouldn't believe, and it pains me to see, and it actually hurt me a little bit to see him go down near the end of the season. I was actually worried for him because I was thought, okay, that's it, he's not coming back. So I was stunned when they re-signed him to the same deal that he had last year. So, and again, it's like people were getting mad at him for getting hurt all the time, and I just have to shake my head and think, dude, it's not like he got hurt in the beginning of the season. He made it all the way through. He just got unlucky near the end.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was the game before last. So I'd say that's a pretty good for a guy who keeps getting hurt all the time.
Yeah.
Like you almost made it. That's baby steps. Next year you make it all the way.
Yeah, hopefully, man.
I think the backups are, if he does get hurt, I think it'll be, you know, it'll suck, but I think our backups are better than they were last year. We're not going to scramble.
Thomas can handle it.
Yeah.
I feel good about a lot of the depth on the team. Maybe we definitely have some questions of depth at linebacker. There's a lot of linebackers there. We just don't know where the depth's coming from. Training camp and preseason games. That's going to be an interesting, probably the most interesting part to see when the twos, the threes come on during the first preseason games. Let's be watching those linebackers and see what they're doing.
I'll be interested to see actually who gets to play with the twos and the threes. I want to see. I want to know if it turns out to be someone like Zach Vigil or Jeff Luck, or if it's going to wind up being Jordan Tripp, like everybody keeps talking about.
Yeah, I think everybody's just assuming that because he's the second-year guy, and that may be the case, too.
And they love him some Tripp. They love them some Tripp.
Yeah.
The Dolphins love Tripp.
Yeah, we'll
can you guys hear me?
Yeah, yep. We can hear you fine. Can you hear us, sir?
Damn, somebody called me. I didn't know what happened, but all right, I'm back.
No, we didn't hear it. We didn't even know it happened.
We didn't even notice. Okay. Now we noticed.
Hey, before we wrap this up, Lewis, did you wanna add anything?
Crap, there was something that I wanted to bring up, but now I forgot what it was.
Before the show started, you had said there was a couple pieces you'd written. You talked about
pieces. You said that you had an interview to play.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll have already played it. Before the show. So as the listeners are hearing this, they've already heard that interview. So I'll be leading the show off with
you. I wanted to react to it and everything.
I can sum it up for you, although everybody heard it. He wasn't real happy about the Omar Kelly Marino thing. He wasn't super emotional. You know, he's not a super emotional guy, but he wasn't too happy about that. He was kind of like you, Lewis. He got what they were saying about the whole fan thing, but he was just explaining, it's like, look, you know, we haven't won for, you know, since 2000 really, and things like that. And he kind of got that a little bit. And it was pretty much, he wasn't happy about that whole, like, pinning the Super Bowls on just Marino. He's like, no, that's not just one guy, that's everybody. So he kind of took the Joe Rose angle on that for sure.
I'm not surprised, and I'm glad he did it, because you know what? Everybody needs to come out and say, what, are you out of your mind?
If you put Marino on the 49ers, it won Super Bowls. You put him on, you know, it's just, you can't compare it. You just can't do that, but good old Omar, he did, and made himself look like a more of a jackass than he is. So
you put Marino on the 49ers, and excuse me, Hillbilly, I have to say it. Oh, yeah, dig it, bro.
There you go.
Dig it, bro. Nice. You put Marino on this team.
You put Marino on any team, man. It's like you put him on the Jaguars, and suddenly they're going for playoffs.
Yeah. Well, and he'll go and say we're being homers, but – We're not. It's just true, and he just made himself look really bad saying that.
He did. I would guess that he kind of already knows that a little bit, even though his ego won't let him say it out loud. I'm sure he knows that. I would imagine that the Sun Sentinel has done a little. I mean, obviously with the David Hyde article, you know, you could tell they were maybe doing a little bit of damage control on that. David Hyde made some really good points about the whole, and I think the conversation started, what, Brady versus Marino. That's really how the whole thing started. David Hyde sat there and he took all of Marino's defenses, like the defenses he played with their rankings, and then he took Brady's rankings, and almost every single one of Brady's defense were like top 8, top 10. And Marino only played with 3 or 4 top 10 defenses. That was just one thing alone that he went with. And then he also talked about like the Hall of Famers piece. How many actual Hall of Famers did Marino play with? It was only one. You know, so
is it himself?
No, besides himself. No, it was I can't even remember. It was a center. And I feel bad. I don't even remember the guy's name.
White Stevenson? No.
I don't remember his name. I'm sorry. I'm a bad Dolphins fan. I was very young, guys. You have to excuse me. I was very young during this period of time. So
I remember I was super young, and my dad would take us to the training camp every year. We lived in Florida for a long time, but I remember I took a bunch of pictures with Dan, but Mark Clayton, dude scared me every time. I don't know what he did. He was kind of being, screwing with me. And then he would say, all right. But it was every year he would come pick on me. But
Clayton's a very interesting individual.
Yeah.
That's cool. I never got to meet him, man. I didn't really start going.
I met him at Finn's weekend. He's interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't really actually start going to the practices till 2008 was the first practice. Chad Pennington, when we had just gotten him, that was the first practice I ever went to. I remember that. It was like nobody there. I mean, we had just come off that 1-15 season, so it was like me and my friend and a few other people. It was pretty empty, man.
I would have thought they would have been excited to see their new quarterback.
I don't, he had been. Yeah, it was Chad Pennington, and it was a Jet, so I don't think the Dolphins fans really thought he was any good.
But he had to be better than what we had.
Yeah, at the time, I think we had Henny was a rookie. Henny was a rookie.
What did we have? I forget.
Henny was a rookie, and I think we had McCown.
Was it McCown? It wasn't a big-eared guy.
I'm sorry?
Josh McCown, right?
Yeah, Josh, whichever McCown we had. Yeah, I think it was Josh McCown, and I know it was Henny's rookie year.
Who was the one guy? He kind of didn't look like a quarterback, but Fiedler.
Fiedler. Oh yeah, that was before. This was after the Fiedler time.
Yeah, but that was all about Ricky Williams. Fiedler had very little to do with it.
And we had some good defense.
I loved Ricky Run, man.
Yeah, between Ricky and that was fun. All right, guys, we're gonna wrap up the show there. Do you want to talk a little bit, Lewis, about your website and give your contact information, all that fun stuff?
It's called finmaniacs.com, and you can reach me at FL Sport Debater. I'm usually tweeting something that's going on the website. I'm always writing. I'm always working, and I'm gonna be at the training camp practices. So if you need to get some a more objective analysis, you can check my tweets. And I try to make sure that I tweet everything that happens, not just the highlights of things. I'm not going to just tweet, oh, look, Tannehill hit a deep ball, everybody rejoice. I'm going to be trying to get everything. It's not going to be easy because I only have 2 eyes, but I'm going to try my best to get everything. So,
okay.
And I'll have daily reports of what I've seen. I'll make sure that everybody gets as much training camp as they can handle, especially since we've had like 5 weeks of absolutely nothing.
Yeah, that's just pretty much nothing in JPP's finger. That's been about it.
There's no more finger. that's something we could talk about real quick. What are you doing with those stupid fireworks that you managed to not one, but 2 people happen to blow off their hand?
Yeah, because Wilson from Tampa did it too, yeah.
Did you see the pictures of JPP's finger?
No, I did not.
Oh, my God, dude. It was a picture right after it happened. And if it's on Twitter, if you want to look at it, but
I'll pass. I'll pass.
Man, that thing was blown off, dude. It was crazy.
Ugh, poor guy. Oh well.
Another thing that players need to be aware of. Okay, you are playing fireworks. Don't waste it on weed. Don't waste it on PEDs. Go out and make your money. Save your money.
And don't invest it in crazy ex players.
Right.
Yeah.
What about you, Hillbilly? I know you at least got a Twitter handle, man. What's the Twitter handle?
Yeah, it's just at Hillbilly Bryn. I'm always listening. I'm going to be at the Carolina and Miami practices whenever they play in South Carolina and the game.
I believe so that's the 18th and 19th, I think, those two days.
Yeah, yep.
Of August.
So we'll be relying on you to live tweet everything.
I have a little bit of a road trip planned to try and go to that. I haven't confirmed it 100% though. But I am actually thinking about going up to that because I'd like to see those scrimmages.
It's in the middle of nowhere, man, but it'll be all right. You'll experience a little country.
Yeah, it's just a short 9-hour drive from where I am.
Yeah.
Where are you, Ron?
I'm actually in Palm Bay, Florida, which is Space Coast. So east, a little bit southeast of Orlando. On the East Coast.
I was going to suggest we go watch training camp together, but like you're way.
I go to training camp all the time. I don't go to them all, but I go to them all the time. Yeah, since 2008, I've been going every year, not to every one.
I lived in Melbourne whenever I was younger.
Oh yeah, that's just like right next to me.
Yeah, right down
there.
The road.
Yeah, that's That's pretty much right there.
Yeah, I know where you're at, buddy.
No, I'll meet up with you, Lewis, when we hit the when I come to a training camp. I'll let you know when I'm going if I can, you know, find you and say hi.
Yeah, well, it's not like there's a whole lot of room to move around, so it won't be hard.
Yeah, I'm sure. It's funny. It's all these since I've been doing this show. It's all the people I've met, you know, doing the show that have come on the show. People on Twitter, on Facebook, and I'm like thinking, man, I've probably seen these guys 10 times at the practices. I just didn't know who they were.
Yeah.
so it'll be kind of different. Usually when I go to the practices, I just me and my friend, that's it. We just know each other. I don't know anybody else. All right, guys.
I'll be coming down to some games in Miami too, and I'll definitely let you guys know.
All right, cool, man. Cool.
All right,
I'm going to wrap up the show real quick. If you guys would like to email the show, it's unsquishthefish@gmail.com or the Twitter handle is at Unsquish the Fish, as well as my new Instagram account that isn't too exciting yet, but I'm kind of getting there a little bit with the Instagram.
Instagram's overrated, and yeah. I'm going to get a lot of hate for saying it.
It's okay. I'm just trying all the different social media avenues. Also, I just wanted to give a quick plug to the Dolphinatics. Dolphinatics is a blog talk radio show. I don't know if you guys have heard of it, but it'll be tonight for you guys. Thursday night, they are going to have Walt Akins on, actually, for their show, which is pretty exciting for them. They're very excited about it. So if you guys want to listen to that, you go to the Dolphinatics Facebook group. That's Dolphinatics, Dolphinatics. Go to their Facebook group. They'll have the link there. If you missed the live show Thursday night, like if you happen to download this after or can't catch it, you can always listen to it afterwards. So I just wanted to give that to Dave and a little plug there. All right, thanks everybody for listening and have a great day.